You kind of threw me off there because I didn't expect you just to be. I was like, "Hey, are you ready to record?" And you're just like, "Yeah, what's up?"
As if I
just called you out of the blue.
Yeah, man. No, I record myself all day long.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a Plumbus Among Us, the Rickest Rick and Morty podcast. My name is Brian, and with me, as always, is Budweiser Frog Jeff. Budweiser Frog Jeff, what's going on?
Feeling light and flavorless.
That's a timely reference, right? Remember when that was a big deal that the stupid fucking frog?
Yeah.
I don't even know why I brought that up. Anyway, because Jeff and I and our friend Dave on the Nothing Important podcast, where we talk to people more famous and successful than we will ever be. For new episodes coming soon, nothingimportantpodcast.com or on iTunes. Or if you're a fan of Better Call Saul, check us out on It's All Good Man the Better. Better Call Saul podcast. You can find that at itsaulgoodman.com or on iTunes or TV Time, which also sponsors this very podcast. TV Time, make sure to download it for your smartphone. Converse, interact, and post about your favorite TV shows and episodes. It's an awesome app, and we're glad that they are partnering up with us. So, Jeff, we're finally recording Rick and Morty, episode 302, Rick Mancing the Stone.
Yes. So, what a crazy episode. It leads on, I guess, if we had a full season start. This, you know, 301 mm-hmm. would have been there. They're really just coming out of the gate sprinting as far as action and murder go. So,
lots of murder in this episode, right? Like, holy shit. Like, everybody died. And it's not even, like, implied death. It's all super gory and at times even uncomfortable.
Well, I don't know about uncomfortable, but that's just my opinion.
I don't know. I'm just
okay with murder, so that's fine.
Yeah, you seem pretty at peace with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Real quick before we get going, one thing we totally forgot to talk about during our 301 discussion was the after scene with Phoenix Person.
Yes, obviously that's probably going to be a beat later on in the season. It didn't come up in this episode. But yes, Phoenix Person, a hilariously crappy name for a newly, probably evil, beloved character.
My whole thing about the after scene from 301, it's nice to see that Tammy has like a real attachment to him outside of her entire plot to get him arrested.
Yeah, and obviously took the time to bring him back in whatever form or for whatever reason that we'll find out.
I'd like to think that it's more than her just bringing him back to use him against his old compatriots, as it is that she had some sort of actual feelings and affections towards him. And it just kind of works in her favor that she can also use him to bring down Rick and presumably Squanchy, because I'm assuming he survived.
I don't remember if he did or not. I'm trying to remember. I thought he once he did his freak out mode, I thought he got shot.
Well, he squanched the fuck out, and I don't think we saw anything after him squanching people up. And the only person that we saw explicitly die of was apparently Bird Person, but he's back as Phoenix Person. So,
well, maybe Squanchy didn't get squanched when I thought he got squanched during the squanching.
Let's all hope. So, back to episode 302. We talked about the violence a little bit. Favorite kill of mine is the bathtub scene.
Okay, excellent choice. Of all of them, that's an excellent choice. Was it because of the oddly lipped page boy that was in there? Or explain your reasoning.
That's the one that I guess I kind of referenced when I said it's kind of a little uncomfortable, maybe because I like almost drowned like a couple years ago. I guess because we see gore in cartoons all the time, right? Like even Family Guy has people getting chopped up, blood flying everywhere. South Park has done that forever. That kind of thing doesn't seem that unusual, but to have like a prolonged drowning in a cartoon,
yeah, that's fair,
that you're watching, okay, it's a little bit more unsettling. It's different than like if he was out in the ocean and then we never saw the character again, but it was a very big focal point of the scenes where very prolonged death for that guy. And obviously it's a cartoon, so I mean I don't have any real emotional attachment to it, like, because who gives a shit?
I guess it also doesn't help that he didn't completely die right away, and then he had to then be murdered by Rick and Morty,
right? It took multiple, well, not well, it took at least two tries,
yeah, exactly,
to finish the job. Really digging Summer in this episode from the get-go. She is a ride or die bitch.
Yeah, no, it's obviously not taking the whole concept of divorce that well between her parents, and is acting out as a stereotypical teenager does, becoming kind of that gothy emo, as far as I would say her attitude is, of whatever, screw it. And then obviously it gets we see right in the very first scene, just gets darker and darker. First scene after the credits, just gets darker and darker, and you know, I think by the end of the episode, works out her differences based, and like most people do, because of a murder spree. You know, you just have to kind of get that out of your system.
Right. Now, my parents have been together like 50 years, but, you know, your parents have been divorced, and I'm sure after that you've probably murdered at least like 2-3 dozen people
well,
by now.
At least one. That was a while ago, but they got divorced when mm-hmm. I mean, my parents got divorced when I was probably like 4 or 5, so I didn't mm-hmm. realize that. My mom's gotten remarried since then, and it's been legit. Got it. So my bloodlust has definitely quelled since it was before. It's still there, kind of lingering. You know, you always have those pains, though, for something like that.
Well, I mean, I could totally understand. I could see how, you know, some people just choose murder to cope.
Yeah.
But, you know, after a while, the fire kind of dies down, yeah. right? So you kind of get it out of your
yeah,
system.
Yeah, it just becomes kind of monotonous after a while. You're not getting the pleasure you used to get. You know, there's lots of, just all down to, like any hobby that you don't really respect.
Right. Well, as somebody who's known you for, many years mm-hmm. now, you know, it's good to see that you're in such a place where the rage to murder has died down to you know, just felonious assault.
Yeah.
So it's good that you're making progress, and I'm happy that you're working
well,
it out.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yes, sir. Poor Jerry, man. He literally does nothing wrong and everybody hates
it. It was honestly sad to at the very beginning. He's just standing there and then Rick is staring at him and doesn't even notice mm-hmm. he's there until he's done talking. So that's how invisible he is out of his mind. Since he got kicked mm-hmm. out of the family. Kids are treating him like crap. He's really going through this. I mean, this thing that he tried to stand up for himself and thought that he was doing the right thing. And he is just being completely shit on. You know, whether it's on purpose or not, obviously the kids are dealing with it in a different way. You know, it's affecting mm-hmm. everybody. And he's just getting the shortest end of the stick, it seems like.
Right. All he wants is a hug. Mm-hmm. That's all he wants. He just wants a hug and to see his children. And nobody can even give him the time of day. Morty gives it a half-ass attempt.
Yeah.
Kind of like a pity attempt at connecting with his, I guess, presumably estranged father now. But not really estranged because it's not like he hasn't come around.
Yeah, I mean, he was just basically moving out right there because the moving van was still there. So it's still all fresh, him leaving.
But to everybody else, it seems just like it's a done deal. Like it was just done. You know, like they've already had time to push him out. Where Morty, he's kind of half-ass feeling it out whether or not he wants to be around his dad. Where Rick, obviously, he doesn't give a shit about Jerry. And then Beth doesn't want to make any sort of connection. And Summer just opts to ignore her dad completely and basically request an adventure with Rick to get out of the situation.
Yeah, and that's again, she doesn't know how to deal with her emotions. Is what I'm gathering or guessing. Mm-hmm. Because it is hard for some people when that happens, especially if it was just out of the blue and there wasn't you know, infidelity or murder or theft or something super fun involved, you know.
I did enjoy Beth's disdain for and apathy towards Jerry is such that she's not even concerned about where her kids went.
Yeah. She was just fine with, they went to a portal, oh, okay, and then just completely walks away, and then still also, you know, is disdained enough that she can't say hello, goodbye, whatever. She is just completely cut the tie at the beginning of the episode.
Even Mother Nature hates Derek.
Yes. Loser. The wind whispers around him.
I hope that's an ongoing joke throughout the rest of the season.
I could see that sticking around. I mean, it's like subtle enough. The wind just becomes subtle enough. They could probably just throw it in wherever they want to.
The wind just kind of becomes a really pathetic narration of Jerry's social status.
The wind cries loser. It's very. It's an old Jimi Hendrix song.
It's one of the classics. Played it at Woodstock
and in Wayne's World,
of course. Not Wayne's World.
No,
2,
I think. Well, actually, it might have been Wayne's World 2. I'm mixing myself up. One of the Wayne's Worlds. It was played.
So the post-apocalyptic Will you say that for me?
Post-apocalyptic.
Thank you, sir. Good assist. 1 point for you. I don't know why the hell I can't say that word. Anyway, post-apocalyptic wasteland world. Apparently, it's taken from Mad Max. I don't know why I've never seen the Mad Max, but. Again, it's just one of those things so ingrained in culture that I know that for whatever reason, when shit goes down and humans become very tribal and very nomadic, the natural progression of clothing goes from suit and tie to S&M gear.
Yeah, obviously. Lots of metal and leather thrown together, usually with, you know, pieces of enemies that you've murdered or other type of scare tactics that go onto it. or as some were pointed out, you know, just basically looking like you're at an amusement park show.
I'd like to think that somewhere out there in those type of worlds, there's like a band of people that went with other sexual fetishes.
Well, I mean, we have the unfortunate circumstance usually in seeing post-apocalyptic worlds in media that we only really see the desert worlds. Or maybe like a complete inner city world. We don't get to see what like post-apocalyptic forest looks like, or beachfront property looks like. You know, we get to miss out on that. So I'm assuming maybe that there's a lot of other maybe shorts get shorter or shorts get longer on the beach. You know, people start making whole other outfits and start looking like fairies or nymphs or something in the forest, you know, or basically just adapting. And obviously the desert is metal and murder, or metal and murder.
Right. I'd like to think that like swamp or like forest would be also like furries.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
People running around in post-apocalyptic versions of like horse outfits.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's lots of squirrels, rabbits, lots of plush animals to dress up as to have sex with one another.
Maybe that's true freedom, my friend. Post-apocalyptic wastelands is true freedom, where you can really just kind of be yourself.
I could see that. Yeah, I mean, and we see it a lot of the time. As much as they seem oppressed, they can still drive anywhere they want as long as they don't run out of gasoline. Or, in this case, magic rock isotope 322.
One of the things I noticed most about this, all the violence and death, is Rick can take a punch.
Yeah, yeah. Right when he injects Morty's arm with the muscle memory serum. Yeah, that muscle memory really remembered it hates people. So, yeah, Rick took one right to the face and just kind of little bloody nose, that's it.
Like, yeah, just bounced back up. But it was no sweat, but Armthony brings Morty to the death dome or whatever the fuck that was supposed to be. One punch, he's knocking people's heads off.
Oh, yeah, like Crush. Well, yeah, Spine Eater. His dome name, I guess. Kind of like the American Gladiator. It's his American Gladiator name. And Nitro was obviously already taken.
Armthony did the whole Hulk Hogan thing.
Oh, of course. Well, if you have 24-inch pythons like that, what else are you supposed to do with them, brother?
24-inch python.
Mm-hmm.
Singular.
Oh, yes, python. Python. I apologize. I feel like an idiot.
Morty, again, he freaks out for the second time this season. I don't remember him freaking out as much in the previous two seasons, but it seems like this is the second time he's had a crazy breakdown.
Well, he's got a lot more. Yeah, he's got a lot more going on, though. I mean, sure, 301, you know, he broke down enough to shoot Rick in the head thinking that he was actually going to murder him. Then, you know, this time we get it because, you know, he's dealing with a lot of that crap just in a different way that Summer's doing it, which very swiftly turns into the exact same way that Summer's dealing with it through putting the
extreme violence,
yes, and murder.
Right. Rick threw out a good E.B. White reference, which is nice.
Yeah, I noticed on Google, I don't know why, it showed up on my Reddit feed, that E.B. White, as of like 9:15 Eastern time, something like that, on Sunday, went up by like 2,000% as far as Google searches for people trying to figure out what that reference meant.
Right. And I bet they just do that kind of thing for the wink and the nod. And Rick even gave one of those, like, shot the gun at the camera, like, kind of off camera, but, you know, it was meant to be
For that one person in the audience, the television audience, who actually figured it out or knew what it meant. Do you know what it refers to, what E.B. White refers to?
Yeah, I actually have it pulled up right now on my work computer because this is what I'm doing at work. He was an American writer, and he was a contributor to the New Yorker magazine, and he also created the English language style guide. I don't know what you know about magazines and newspapers, or what anybody out there knows about magazines and newspapers. It's not just a bunch of articles put together by a bunch of journalists and editors. They have a singular voice, and that singular voice is defined through the style guide. So, like, modern-day style guides will have a lot of terms that you can and cannot use as a writer or a syndicated writer in their newspaper.
Right. So, as far as the semantics, that's where you get down to writing styles also that Rick was referring to about Thunderdome versus Blood Dome or whatever. I forgot to write that down.
Right. Right. It's a big stick dome.
Yes.
It's a big dome made out of sticks.
One I don't think you could ride a motorcycle around in. So Summer eventually goes out on her own, and Rick just kind of leaves around the same murder dome time, blood dome, thunder dome, whatever, to go to former Seattle to hunt former humans with the Death Stalkers, and that's where she starts building a relationship with one of the Death Stalkers there. And
yeah, I guess what surprised me, if it's former Seattle, is Seattle a desert? Or did it turn desert? It probably turned desert, and that's what caused the apocalypse.
Well, the boom boom caused the apocalypse.
Right.
But, Seattle's in the middle of forest and on an ocean. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not anywhere near desert unless it's caused by mountains or something like that. So I don't know where this desert came from that they're in and how far away it is, because it's a good couple days, or it's a good day and a half drive. I think if they're in even California, which I can think is the closest desert, or Nevada, to get to Seattle, I mean that'd be a far drive. I forget where the world takes place though. It might take place in Washington, I think, actually. Now that we talk about it,
you know, I'm glad that Summer called out that boom boom bullshit, like how it ruined his wordy book.
Oh, you mean dictionary?
I do like how his response was, yeah. But I'm so glad they kind of made fun of that. That's always been my biggest irritation with post-apocalyptic scenarios, is there's always the group of people that speak like a kindergartner for some reason. Even in The Walking Dead. I haven't watched The Walking Dead at all last season because it kind of really sucks now. Like, The Walking Dead really, really sucks now.
Yeah, but I'm a couple seasons behind, personally.
You might as well just stop. You might as well just stop. It's fucking terrible, and here's the reason why. Somehow Rick and his band of merry men that he has now, there's only like four original characters remaining, which that in itself is fine. But like, so him and his group stumble upon these people that live in a trash heap, pretty much. And the woman has this dumb, like, Mo from the Three... The woman who's the leader of the people that live in the trash heap has this dumb Mo from Three Stooges haircut.
Okay.
And it is pretty much like Mad Max, because one, to gain her trust, for some reason they have to throw Rick down into a pit in the garbage where he has to fight a zombie that's essentially in S&M gear with a bunch of pipes pushed through him like spikes. So he has to defeat this thing barehanded with no weapons. And the woman, the entire time, just like in these dumb movies where it's like, murder dome. You know, everybody stands on the top, and of course, the leader won't let anybody help Rick or throw anything down to help him because he has to use his own art and cunning and badassery to defeat this insanely stupid zombie with a knight's mask on with like spikes everywhere. But what really aggravated me beyond that inane stupidity is she talks, this group, now, this is The Walking Dead, so like this has happened like comparable to our world, like in the last 2 years, right? The group all talks in that same stupid, when people got sicky, like that whole like childish yet dark kindergarten speak.
I don't understand how quickly a society can devolve that people just instantly become dumb or can't teach people how to talk correctly. I mean, it's not been a generation. It's not been like 20 years, 20, 25 years between this. But anyway, back to Rick and Morty here. So she definitely calls them out, and they come back, and they form a nice little relationship, which is what she needs, kind of a side guy to take her mind off of things.
I wasn't sure where they were going with that at first. When he removed the bucket and had the mustache, I was
a handsome blonde mustache, by the way. I can very much appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to figure out where they were going and where the connection was. First off, was her first issue with the mustache, or was her issue that his face was more feminine than the rest of his body would put up?
Because
I felt her attraction to him was like he was this big, crazy, like alpha male, but then he kind of had like a pretty boy.
He had like a bowl cut
face.
Yeah, and then a weird mustache.
But you know, like his face was very soft and like didn't really match the body. So your expectation, it's like when you hear a radio or when you see a picture of a radio broadcaster, they never quite match up what you think they would look
exactly.
like. That's So was that her issue, or was it actually the mustache?
I think it's a combo of the two. Just being completely surprised mm-hmm. that, you know, I didn't expect him to look like that. I would have figured that based on the way he talks through a bucket, that
a galvanized steel panel.
That he would have, you know, like kind of long, stringy, greasy hair with like a mm-hmm. wispy beard mustache type thing going on. Mm-hmm. You know, not a well-groomed, pretty boy, blonde guy with a what essentially is a 70s porn mustache. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it was just more the general surprise of not meeting expectations.
Fair enough. He goes on a diatribe about how pretty much his point is everything sucks, and nothing matters. And he knows that, but he knows by wearing the bucket, he's making his image matter.
Right. And then that's why everyone who sees his face dies. Because he wasn't trying to groom himself, because it's not about image anymore in the blood dome. But he's already mm-hmm. grooming himself and doing things to please other people now that Summer was talking about that. So he's just, Summer has forced him to compromise his values.
Yeah. I don't know if that's really a sex scene, but that was a really long makeout scene for an underage girl.
For an underage girl, I mean, there was lots of time before the gimp walked in, or the intern, whatever you want to call it, and right. then after the intern walked out.
It was almost like in the episode that we just did, 102, Mr. Goldenfold had, like, the fantasy within the fantasy within the fantasy of Summer,
yeah.
you know? And, like, she's very buxom and, like, very, very adult-like, and it's kind of awkward watching it because, you know, the character is supposed to be underage, but then you're like, well, fuck it, it's just a stupid cartoon.
Yeah, I mean,
it's very much like the same feeling, like the same tone in this awkwardly long and loud
makeup.
Yeah,
and you get that when she eventually switches to her post-apocalyptic outfit a la Tina Turner in Beyond Thunderdome or what's her name, Charlize Theron in the newest one. Yeah, you get mm-hmm. some odd sexualization of what is supposed to be an underage girl at this time, yeah. But I guess we never see her birthday, and do we know her actual birthday? I mean, all we know is she's about 18.
I guess we don't, but maybe they're keeping it ambiguous just to make people slightly uncomfortable, or at least slightly to, like, second-guess yourself.
As they should.
Rick, his robot family, or android family, that he creates to appease Beth, or to, I guess, explain the... I guess to make up for the disappearance of the actual Summer and Morty...
And eventually him, too.
Awesome.
He eventually throws one of himself in for good measure.
Morty's freak out where he gains sentience and then loses it again. All he wants to do is be a real boy, and then his programming shuts it down.
Yeah, you know, it's nice to know that, well, I guess it's not nice to know that Beth is so consumed a little bit. She's just with the happiness mm-hmm. because they're being happy for her because of the mm-hmm. divorce. Or she's just kind of in her own head a little bit too much. She doesn't notice how completely crazy... the robots are acting, and that they never act like that. Robot Rick and Morty and Summer. But yes, eventually, AI learned to love, which is the greatest danger that we can all have, is that AI learns to love. And had to be shut down remotely by Rick, and so that way they could be presumably decapitated and disassembled in the garage.
I do... before Rick and everybody left, because Summer, let's go back a little bit. Summer became essentially a housewife in the post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, after, after Rick finally used the MacGuffin of isotope 322 to just, all he did was give them electricity. And then within a couple of weeks, society changed back to normal, essentially.
Right, right. And anybody that's lived in the suburb totally has had that neighbor that bitches at them for not using the recycle bin.
Yes.
Right. And then she kind of falls into the doldrums of marriage, including, like, the douche husband who's so into whatever sport playoff, Blood Dome or whatever he was mm-hmm. watching, the Blood Dome playoffs, that, you know, like, she feels unfulfilled. I love when they decide to split. Rick takes a second and pulls the isotope from the machine, thus killing everybody's electric. Source.
And
before he jumps through the portal.
Classic Rick move there. Just destroying a world before he leaves and not worrying about any of the consequences that are going to happen. Classic Rick.
It's very much akin to when people are going to the bathroom and you shut the light off on
them.
Yeah. Summer's whole experience had prompted her to make peace with Jerry, or at least, like, try to connect with him.
Yeah, the whole experience just, you know, taught her that there's more sides to see. You can't just blame one person. Marriage is tough to maintain that relationship. And, you know, it seems like it was, she plays it up like it was Rick's ultimate plan to do that. But I think just Rick just didn't give a shit, and it just kind of happened naturally, and then he took credit for it.
It just kind of worked out.
Exactly. So, but he took credit for it as a lesson. And she's thankful for it, just again, because she, as much as she's getting into Rick's world, Rick and Morty's world of traveling, I still don't think she totally gets it.
Right. And I'm pretty amazed Jerry doesn't know what prostitutes are, what hookers are.
Of all people, right?
Right. See, but that's just because he's such a good guy. Poor Jerry. Everybody hates Jerry, and Jerry has literally done nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Except for state the obvious that Rick is just fucking up everybody's lives. But somehow, true to form, and I guess that totally fits with the character of Rick, that manages to fuck up Jerry's life, the fact that he might go against Rick.
Yeah. And, you know, Jerry's just kind of always trying to do the right thing. But sometimes, to him, the right thing is be a huge pussy and back down. And then sometimes it's stand up, but it's all in the wrong circumstance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Touching scene, though. Given the mutant head, the first mutant that he killed.
Yeah.
The first mutant that Summer killed. She gives it as a gift to Jerry.
All three eyes, three horns, three teeth. I wonder if there's any significance to
That's another thing. How come in movies, no matter what it is, or movies or TV shows, whenever they go to another world, everybody either has an extremely large amount of eyes or just three or one? Nobody ever has just five or six or four eyes. It always has to be three or a ton.
I don't know. My main thing is, how does just mutants that happen? So I assume the big boom was nuclear holocaust of some type. I don't know of any way that a person mutates, unless they were like an infant and still be forming, that they would mutate to have a third eye. Any Cyclops baby that comes out, which there are very few humans that's happened to, but anything, just basically instantly dies once it comes out. So I can't imagine like a third one, first of all, it happening, or second of all, like it surviving past birth. And third of all, like, it having any quality of life that it would be able to do anything, like continue to live in a post-apocalyptic world and, you know, be a murderer. But whatever. Whatever. That's probably why it was an easy kill, too, then.
Going forward, I'd like to see... I know they're not going to have it, but remember when we talked about 301, I was like, oh, maybe they'll change the character model of Summer a little bit, and she'll have, like, the bang hanging down from her pullback ponytail. Right. Okay, so now my new one is, and because we've already seen previews of future episodes that it's not there, her face tattoo.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to her being a teenager and just say that it's a henna tattoo that she got in an extremely rebellious piece of spring break, which is essentially what the post-apocalyptic world was for her. It was spring break time. She was there to party, a.k.a. murder things, and hook up with dudes. And just kind of forget about life, because everything back home is so hard. So,
look at that. Nice. I didn't think about the spring break thing, but that's awesome. Good call. Good call. That's another point for you, my friend.
All right. I'll take it.
And before we head out, the after scene, Jerry's important mail is somehow destroyed by a wolf.
Yes, a wolf that has sentience enough to know it just wants to destroy his check, even though it has no anything to do with him. It's just a piece of paper. And then chews it up just enough to throw it back up in front of him so he could still go. That's more like peeing or spitting on something. Chewed it up just enough to where it's still there and he can still take it, but there's the humiliation to him that it happened.
Right. Because now he has to touch it.
Yeah, he has to dig through the spit and vomit. And then we get our final loser. As the wind goes through, and again, shows that Jerry's World just sucks.
Overall, great episode. I enjoyed it quite immensely.
This is one that, I mean, it was just so fast-paced that it was hard to to even keep track of as far as notes and things like that go. So I'm sure we missed quite a few things, you know, but...
Right.
Picked up on enough to have a decent conversation. So I hope, listeners, I hope you guys felt the same way. And let us know. Let us know what we got wrong. Let us know what we forgot or things that you'd maybe like to talk about. See if we picked up on them too.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely throw it in next up. You know, during our discussion of the next episode, which should be a big one because it's Pickle Rick.
Yes, they teased Pickle Rick so much that we thought it would be this one, but obviously we missed out on that, and we got a Rick Mancing the Stone about post-apocalypse. And you know, I feel bad for myself that I didn't realize the Romancing the Stone and put the since they've only shown like a couple episodes worth of stuff, I should put that together myself. So I'm going to just sit here and be sad.
Sometimes that's all you can do. You can do. I hope, I just hope Pickle Rick has lived up to the hype. Because I think when everybody saw the Pickle Rick thing to begin with, they're like, oh man, that's such a stupid concept. Only Rick and Morty could pull that off.
And which.
Maybe South Park could pull that
but,
off.
But
that's it. It's elite company. Yes. It's elite company that could pull off the whole anthropomorphic. Or, you know, the whole, like, sending your consciousness into a pickle thing.
Right.
Very few shows could pull that
off. So, let's fingers crossed hope it works out. If the first two episodes are any indication, it probably will, just because it's going to be so effing crazy. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Yep, absolutely. So, strong restart, or I guess start again. I don't know what that would be. Strong second episode of Season 3 for Rick and Morty. Please make sure to check us out on the Nothing Important podcast. And It's All Good, Man, if you're into Better Call Saul. Make sure that you download the TV Time app. And, of course, make sure to check us out on Twitter at Aplumbus Among Us, spelled just how it sounds. Interact with us. Talk with us. Tell us why we're dumb. Tell us why we're awesome. Or even share your favorite brownie recipe, because who doesn't like brownies?
I do. Very much. Yeah.
Yes. Wes, real quick, brownies with or without frosting?
Oh, without frosting. I'm not a fan of frosting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. People who put frosting on brownies, it's like you're ruining a great thing.
Yeah. You're taking away from, you're just trying to polish a turd. And the turd in this case is the frosting.
Not sure if that makes sense.
It makes sense to me. It makes sense.
All right, well, we hope to see you next week. Hope you listen to us on our episode, on our discussion of episode 303, Pickle Rick. And hopefully next week, we get to check in with the Moon Men.
Would you seriously shut the fuck up about the Moon Men?